we are charged with putting praise into expression, to declare the praises of God. So come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with song. As we've been journeying each week, we've been looking at the call of the scripture to worship, but we've also been looking at the question of, well, we see that, but what does it look like? What does that expression look like? And there are different expressions called out here. There's singing, there's shouting, there's thanksgiving, there's extolling. And this morning, we focus in on one particular expression that's kind of linked to the extolling of God. We focus in on a phrase that is used quite a lot in our worship vocabulary. And we're going to look at it in the Hebrew, because I know that's your favorite. And it's this term that appears in the psalm, but appears loads. It's this term, barok. And it's the Hebrew word barok that appears 75 times across the psalms, which means it's once every two psalms, approximately, this word appears. So clearly this is a really important worship expression. This set of songs in the Bible, it's all about worship. It features more there than anywhere else. In fact, it's mentioned over 300 times in the Old Testament. And the word barok is translated in the scripture as the word bless. And we regularly use that word within the confines of worship. Talk about blessing God. And the scripture reflects that. The psalmist says, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. Psalm 100 says, enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Be thankful to him and bless his name. Psalm 103 says, bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. Verse 20, bless the Lord, O you, his angels, you mighty ones who do his word, obeying the voice of his word. Bless the Lord, all his hosts, his ministers who do his will. Bless the Lord, all his works in all places of his dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul. This term, barok, or bless, is a word that is used frequently within our worship vocabulary. But what does the word actually mean? Well, believe it or not, this really simple common word has quite a complex meaning. If you were to look it up, I mean, obviously you'll know all this already from the original Hebrew, but if you were to look it up, which I had to, here's what it means. It means to kneel or bow, to give reverence as an act of adoration, to do or give something of value to another. It implies a continual conscious giving place to God, and it implies being attuned to him and his presence. This is important that we understand this when we talk about what blessing God actually means. So let's look at these and apply it to worship. The first definition means to kneel or bow down. In fact, it is within this psalm, we see this term being used. It says in Psalm 95, come, let us bow down and worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. The word kneel here is the word barok. Now, the time that you would typically kneel or bow before someone is in an act of reverence and respect. For example, in the presence of royalty, in the presence of someone of splendor or importance, or in the presence of someone for whom you have respect. And this was something that Susan and I had to adapt to and struggled with a little bit when we first arrived at Glasgow Elam, because many people, particularly from African cultures, when encountering a minister or a minister's wife, would bow or curtsy. And we're like, no, don't bow, don't bow. And they're like, no, it's not an act of worship. It's us demonstrating respect. I tried to introduce it with the kids at home, but they didn't really... didn't really work. But you would typically bow or curtsy because this bowing or kneeling is an act of recognition. It is a positioning. And this is where we begin to understand that worship is about the overflow of the heart into our thoughts and into our hearts and into our speech and into our conduct, because it's this whole idea of when we understand that we're in the presence of somebody who is royal or somebody who is great, that that is then enacted in our body. It's that extension. And we bow or kneel as a recognition of sovereignty or importance. It's almost like my bowing or kneeling before you is my recognition that you are someone great, someone more powerful than I. My bowing or kneeling recognizes that you are sovereign and you have power over me. But more than just it being this act of recognition, it's also about a positioning. And our position is communicating, as I come into your presence, not only do I recognize that you are great and greater, but I bow down or kneel to show my respect for you, my reverence for you, my humility before you. My kneeling and bowing acknowledges my submission to you. I kneel or bow because I am in submission to you. And in fact, if you take it back to its earliest thoughts, particularly in relation to kings and rulers, the idea was that nobody should stand in the presence of a king and therefore take the focus from the king. A subject bowing before their sovereign was their way of knowledge, acknowledging that all of the focus was to go upon the sovereign and none of it was to go upon themselves. So they go out of the way before the king. It was to say that nothing of themselves should stand in the way of the view of greatness. Now fit that into worship, and it presents an interesting view of blessing God. To bless God, first and foremost, is to communicate, God, I recognize that you are great, that you are sovereign, that you're important, that you're wrapped in splendor and awe. To bless him is to recognize him as God. However, blessing him is also about positioning ourselves and saying in this moment of worship, in this moment of blessing, I revere you, I respect you, I humble myself before you, I submit and acknowledge that you are great and that you are greater. And in this moment, I don't want anything of me to get in the way of the view of you. To bless him is to say, I want to allow you and only you to fill my vision for this moment, because this moment is all about you. So blessing God, or that which blesses God, is when we acknowledge and revere and recognize his splendor and his glory. That blesses him. It's when we humble ourselves and say, you are great. And I lower myself in dependence on you and in respect of you. That blesses him. And it's when we say in this moment, nothing else is of importance. My vision is filled with all of you and you alone. That blesses his heart. That's what it means to bless God. The second definition of the term Barak is to give reverence as in an act of adoration. This is really important because our worship is not about it being a chore. It's not about a penance. It shouldn't be obligation. It shouldn't be, you know, this is something that I have to do. I have to sit through this stuff to get to the word, the good bit, the meat. It should be, actually, I'm doing this because I love you. I'm doing this because I want to. Because I adore you. To bless God is to convey passion. It's to convey and communicate adoration. An expression of worship should reveal our heart of love, and quite simply, it should be us loving upon God. Let me ask this question. If a visitor with no concept of church was to walk through the door this morning, would they see a group of people loving upon God? Would they describe our actions as acts of all-out adoration? If they were to look around the room in the midst of worship, would they say, wow, these people must really love God? Would people know from our worship that we are radically in love with God? Does our expression convey that? Does my expression convey that? Does your expression convey that? If the answer in your mind is no, or you're not sure, then it shows that we all need to do something in this act of blessing him together. Because our worship should be about loving upon him and adoring him. To bless him is to love him, it's to adore him. But equally then what we learn is, well, what blesses God? When we love upon him. When we come and we adore him. We see that beautifully in that moment with Jesus when the woman comes to his feet and they're like, get her away from you. She's filth. This is terrible. And he's like, no, I love this. This act of love and adoration is blessing me. It's blessing me. The third definition of Barak, to bless, is to do or give something of value to another. To bless God is to give. It's to give something of value, something of worth. It's to give extravagantly. We are to give in worship. And I'm not talking here about financial giving, although we give to God as an act of worship, and our giving is worship. But our worship should involve the giving of ourselves, the spending of ourselves, the spending of our effort and our energy in the task of adoring and blessing, that we waste ourselves in worship, that we give everything that we've got, our bodies, our minds, our emotions, our thoughts, our energies, into this task of adoring him and expressing adoration to him. Do you know what? This got me thinking, like, we should be exhausted at the end of worship. Which in this, he isn't out with the bounds of possibility. But we should be exhausted because we have given everything over to the task of worship. We have spent ourselves. Can you honestly say that you spend yourself in expressing worship to him? That you give all of yourself to the task of adoring him? Is what you give in that moment that which you say is of value? Or let's phrase it this way, does it reflect the value of God in your life? To bless him is to adore him. The fourth definition of Barak, to bless, is an implication. It implies that there is a continual conscious giving place to God. To bless him is to choose to honor him. It's to choose to focus upon him. It's to choose to give him precedence and first place in our lives. It's to say, in this moment, I'm placing all of my focus on you. I am turning my eyes upon Jesus and looking full in his wonderful face. It's to allow the things of earth to grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. To bless him is to say, you are my God and the very epicenter of my existence. And I give you all the honor that you are due, and I align my life to you. What blesses God? When we place him. When we give him his place in our lives. And that's not just lip service or belief, but it's in every aspect of who we are, and it's expressed in our worship and adoration of him. When we put him in the place of focus, it blesses him. And I love the final definition of Barak, to bless. It's to be attuned to him in his presence. And I looked up the term attuned in the dictionary, and here's what it means in relation to worship. We put its definition into worship. To bless God is to be at one with him. It's to be at one with his presence. It's to become accustomed to him, to be sensitive to his presence. In other words, to worship, to bless, is to be intimate, to come so close as to be one with him, to be sensitive to him, sensitive to his heart and his voice, to be accustomed to him, is to know him. What blesses God? When we seek him with all that we've got. when we seek to get as close to him as we possibly can, when we are sensitive to his heart and his voice, and we allow that to shape our function in his presence and our activity in his presence, that's what blesses him. They bring all of that stuff and fit it into the psalm. Bless the Lord, O my soul, all that is within, all my inmost being, bless his holy name. Here's what the psalmist is saying here. He says, with all that is within me, with the very epicenter and core of who I am, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to call out and recognize his greatness and his splendor. I'm going to communicate and acknowledge that not only is he great, but he is greater. I respect him and I humble myself before him and I submit my innermost being to him and I allow my vision to be filled with him and him alone, making him the center of my attention and just loving upon him and adoring him and spending myself in the adoration of him. I'm going to honor him. I'm going to give him his place. I'm going to let him take precedence and I'm going to be as intimate with him as I can possibly be. This is what it means to bless him. It's when we take our understanding of him, we take our heart experience of him, we allow that to find its expression in every component of who we are. But as I close, here's another profound thought. If this is what the term bless means, and what it means to bless God, then could this suggest a little bit about what it means when God blesses us? That when God releases blessing over us, that God in that moment begins to call out greatness in us and begins to hone in on the potential of our lives. But that's what his blessing does when it arrives upon us. It begins to release greatness within us. It begins to call us into what we can be and not what we have been. That when he releases blessing over us, in that moment he kneels down to us, not in terms of submission and reverence, but in terms of coming down to our level and stepping into our worlds and beginning to move and act. That when blessing arrives in our lives, the activity of God begins to get to work. That when he blesses us, he fills his vision with us. That he makes us the center of his attention and the apple of his eye. That when he blesses us, he loves upon us and he adores us passionately and he unconditionally and he just pours out without limit and without merit his love. And that when he blesses us, he becomes attuned to us, intimate with us, sensitive to our hearts and our voices and our needs. What a powerful image and understanding of what it means when God blesses us. And truly such an understanding of his blessing means that every time we perceive his blessing, every time we perceive him calling out greatness within us and releasing us to be better than we currently are and all that we're meant to be, every time we perceive his presence moving in our lives, every time we perceive his love, every time we perceive his response to our prayers and our requests, every time we perceive blessing, we must be moved, motivated surely to just bless him back. And then we get caught in this cycle of blessing that every blessing he pours out, we turn right back into praise. And we get caught in this cycle of blessing that is actually just the rhythm of his heart. How amazing is that? He blesses us, and as we perceive and experience that, we release that back in blessing to him, and he blesses us, and we bless him. However, here's another thought. Because the scripture makes it clear that blessing is something that we can give away. And how often do we say to people, bless you? God bless you. The Lord bless you. Perhaps we'll see even more when we perceive what we're actually asking of God in that moment. What we're saying when we say to someone, God bless you, when we bless them, we're saying, God, would you call out your greatness in that person's life? Would you hone in on the potential of that person and shape them to be who they're meant to be? And when we say, God, would you bless that person? We're saying, God, would you kneel down to their level? Would you invade their world with your reality? Would you step into their life and situation and move and act and give of yourself to them? When we bless them, we're saying, God, would you fill your vision with them? Turn your attention towards them. See them. Make them your focus, God. And when we say, God bless you, we're saying, God, would you love upon them? Would you lavish them with your love? Heap your heart and compassion upon them. When we say, God bless you, we're saying, God, attune yourself to them. Become intimately involved in their lives. Ambush them with your presence. Hear their heart and meet their needs. Three simple words. God bless you. These simple words, which when spoken from the heart with understanding and intention, releases the power of blessing that can actually unlock spiritual awakening and transformation in a life. And not just in a life. But think about the revolution that could begin when an understanding heart begins to release blessing and declare, may God bless your ministry. May God bless your home. May God bless your family, your finances, your job. What we're saying is, God, would you turn your attention to that? Would you call out greatness in that family? Would you call out greatness in that home? Would you begin to step into that ministry? When we say, God, would you bless that project? Would you bless that church? Would you bless that area? God, would you bless our nation? We're saying, God, turn your attention here. Come down, invade. Lavish with love. Call out the greatness of our nation again. It's harder, though, when you say, God, would you bless my enemies? With showers of blessing. Or when you say, God, I want to pray blessing over that school. Over MPs and MSPs. Over our parliament. Over our king. Over our society. Think what would happen. Think what could happen if we started to release blessing instead of curse. Instead of calling out the negative, we ask, God, this isn't great. Would you bless that? God, this conversation I've had with this person isn't great. Would you just bless them? This situation, this relationship isn't fantastic. Would you release blessing upon it? Let's start a blessing revolution. Let's begin that revolution, though, with the blessing of God. Let's bring this understanding of Baruch, of blessing, into our approach to and our expression of worship this morning. Let's begin to intentionally bless God together.